Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bridge, a Star Trek Multiverse podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is a brand new member of the team, and I'd like to introduce you to Andrew. Andrew, how's it going?
Good, good. Warm, but good.
Yes. It's great to have you on board. I don't know what if we were equating this to a starship. I don't know. I haven't given a designation yet, so stay tuned for that one once I decide what it is.
That's okay. But happy to be aboard.
Welcome to have it's great to have you on the team. And why don't you just give a brief overview of yourself and give the listeners a brief summation of who you are and what you're about.
Yeah, well, my name is Andrew, and I've been a Star Trek fan pretty much back since around 1999. Mm-hmm. I think in my in the Star Trek communities, I usually use the username AJ Hallowell. So I'm active on Memory Alpha. I've been active on Memory Beta, a few message boards here and there. I'm especially trying to learn more about the Star Trek Twitter universe and all of the good and bad that comes with that. I think I first came to Star Trek from Star Trek Voyager, and that was really a big part of my connection and kind of my relationship with my mom at that point in my life. So I've been continued to remain a loyal Star Trek fan ever since, especially with Discovery, Picard, and the like 6 to 13 other Star Trek series that are coming out in the next 2 or 3 years.
Right, which is nothing to complain about, that's for sure.
That's right.
So what was it, because you said you came into Star Trek in around 1999. Mm-hmm. What was it that sort of piqued your interest about the franchise?
Sure. Well, I very distinctively remember the first episode that I caught. It was Voyager's season 5's Night, when they're kind of going through an area of space without any stars, and it gives Captain Janeway a chance to kind of think about the decision that led Voyager to being trapped in the Delta Quadrant. And it was a summer day, so it wasn't the first run, it was the rerun later on, and it just kind of had it on the background, and I didn't understand what was going on, but it more and more caught my attention as the episode progressed. And at one point, the whole crew bands around Captain Janeway, and the doctor says, "What's a hologram to do?" And I can't place my finger on it, but when I first heard that he was a hologram, I thought, oh, this show is so cool. I have to learn more about this and learn more about what's going on. I've heard of Star Trek before, but I don't know, really what all that means. So from then on, with intention, I was able to hunt it down, and it became my thing I did every Wednesday on UPN.
Okay, so it was all about the hologram then that spoke was something.
Yes, something about it just connected with me. I can't put my finger on it. But,
and just out of curiosity, what age were you around that?
So I would have been 10 or 11, give or take.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Cool.
Holograms cool among that age group, I guess.
Well, definitely, yeah. I mean, who would not find that interesting? Definitely. So you said you had said that you had heard of Star Trek before. Mm-hmm. Was that more in passing, or had you seen random clicking through the TV? You saw,
Yeah, it's a little bit of. Yeah, it's that randomness. I mean, Star Trek is such a big part of culture. I, of course, heard of it before. I knew what Spock was. I can remember in elementary school trying to make my fingers do the live long and prosper.
I still can't
salute.
Do it. I'm from that. Yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't really know. Star Trek had not meant anything to me yet at that point, especially compared to now. It's such a big part of, I think, what shaped who I became as an adult. And I think, in hindsight, I didn't know it at the time, but in hindsight, I think while flipping through channels, I did catch the episode Blood Fever. I didn't watch all of it, but just there was a few scenes. And I remember as, a kid thinking, okay, well, they're talking about sex too much. I'm going to flip the channels. This isn't interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But Night was the first episode I sat down and had my attention.
Okay. Interesting. So let's go through some, I guess, the obvious questions, and that is, so if you had to pick a favorite Star Trek series out of all of them, which one would you choose?
Oh, that's easy. I mean, Star Trek Voyager just means so much to me. Like I said, it's it was a very formative part of my life that I got to experience that as a family with my mom. And I've since had the chance to meet a couple of the actors. And whenever I get the chance, I try to track down like props and things on eBay and online, and you know, as my budget allows, of course. Voyager is my passion, and I understand they're even doing a kind of reunion thing on YouTube, Twitter that I have to keep an eye out for.
Interesting. A lot of franchises are doing that now with everything that's going on, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I like that the you know, creatives and people of that nature are doing that to kind of, you know, get people's mind off things and entertain, even though they can't work and there's nothing for us to nothing new for us to watch. So it's a cool way to and it's kind of like a online convention, which I think is going to be the way of the future. After this, at some point, I think, you know, I mean, there will always be in-person conventions, but I think you're going to see a lot more geared in this direction. That's just a personal thought that I think it's going to trend towards. But okay, so Voyager is your favorite.
Mm-hmm.
If you could pick, let's say, I know there were lots of episodes of Voyager. If there was one that you would say, let's say you're trying to get somebody into Voyager for the first time, what would be an episode that you say, all right? And aside from, okay, if the pilot is somehow for whatever reason off limits to your availability, you can't recommend the pilot, whatever happened. If you could recommend one episode that's not the pilot to get somebody into Voyager and sort of allow them to see why you think it's so great, what would that episode be?
Oh, gosh. I was all ready to say the pilot, too.
and I figured you would, because that's what most people would say.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, so much of my being a fan, I think, is connected to kind of the small details and like the recurring thoughts that I always gravitate towards those. Like I could even tell you, you know, my favorite episodes are over here, but in terms of getting a new person to appreciate Star Trek Voyager, I feel like it has to be it has to be one part thought provoking. It has to not get too deep into the premise and the background of the show. Like I mentioned, Night, you know, maybe not everyone is going to gravitate towards Night because they don't appreciate what is this thing that happened 5 years ago and why is she still not over it? So my second answer would be Night. I'm going to try that one and see how that sticks. My first thought is maybe like the 37s, which is the Amelia Earhart, something that I'm not saying it's one of the greatest episodes, but it's something that I think a non-Star Trek fan
I really did enjoy
relate
that
one, to.
Now that you mentioned that, yeah, that was a really...
I think that could be a good bring someone into the franchise type opportunity, because it does mention, at least if I remember correctly, you know, she gives the crew a chance to... I consider myself a bit of a Star Trek trivia buff, so I'm hopefully doing that service well. I believe she, you give the crew a chance to stay behind on the planet, and there's this big heart-touching moment where Chakotay and Janeway open the cargo bay, and it's empty, and nobody wants to stay behind because they have so much faith in her. So I think that's the same episode. I hope so. But also, you know, it's got the sci-fi element to it. So I think that's a good. That's my That's a final answer.
good choices. Good choices. Okay, so we got some entry points. Now you mentioned it, so I'm gonna have to quiz you further. Favorite? Now you said okay, good. You gave a good kind of starter pack kind of thing. So what's your favorite? Give me your. I won't make you single one because I know that's difficult. Give me a top three. Your personal top three.
Oh, are we deep diving into Voyager or everything?
Whatever you want. Your top three episodes of any Star Trek.
Okay. Well, the first two that come to mind are Voyager. It's The Haunting of Deck 12 and Repression are definitely my two they immediately come to mind. And maybe, oh, and Good Shepherd, I guess, would be third. So The Haunting of Deck 12 is, or is it The Haunting of Deck 13? Well, weird trivia thought. Okay. The idea is Neelix tells the Borg children a kind of ghost story of a creature who took over the ship and everything goes wacky and everybody's, zany antics ensue, so to speak. And I think that's just a fun, it's got the sci-fi, it's got the humor, it's got all of our characters being, their best, and a few of the kind of background recurring characters, a few interesting technology references. And that's kind of the usual things that I gravitate to as my favorite. Sure. And it's different than most other episodes. I don't think there's anything that's too specifically similar to
the closest you're probably going to get to a Halloween episode too, probably.
Yeah.
So.
That reminds me of another one. And then I said repression because it's near the end of the series and they still had one last opportunity to throw in a Maquis story. And again, it's a lot of the same things. We get some callbacks to recurring characters. We get some technology callbacks, and it's just a few, it's a fun story that anyone can appreciate if they're kind of watching it in the background. But if you're a diehard trivia fan, you're like, oh my gosh, they're referencing that. And, Tuvok's son is over here. And, Chell was over in this episode and he's back and stuff like that.
Awesome.
And then what was the third one I said? Good Shepherd. Good Shepherd goes deep diving into the background characters. And that's one of the things I think that is my, like one of the things I love, my bread and butter of Star Trek is what makes this, they already have so much to this cinematic universe. What makes it like deep dives into it? What is going on in the background that you maybe don't notice? That's the things I love, the characters who are recurring in the background. And when they get a chance to tell the story of, this is what normal life is like when you're not the main character or the hero. And, to see what the ensign down on deck 15 is doing. So I'm really excited to see how Lower Decks, one of the upcoming series, is turned out, because that's kind of been my fanboy dream for a long time.
That's going to be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Ever since the TNG episode where they kind of did that with the, here's a few ensigns down on so-and-so and what a day in their life is like. So those are my key highlights that come to mind. I'm leaning Voyager heavy, but I have some others elsewhere.
That's all right. We can get into those when those particular series come up.
Yeah.
But so now that we've gotten those questions out of the way, and I think I may know your answer, but who is your favorite Star Trek captain?
So my answer is Captain Janeway. But my kind of unfair second is Philippa Georgiou. Something about just even the one episode we got to see her. And because I think a lot of people would usually, most of the answers are going to be probably like the key five and Janeway. So lots of people have heard reasons why Janeway is their favorite. But I'm going to speak a bit to, something about the way they introduced Georgiou. She just seemed very heroic, but still real. And even in just those two episodes we saw her, left me wanting like much, much more. And I would totally watch a series about like just the Shenzhou's adventures. Mm-hmm. So just the way Michelle Yeoh did that. So in just 2 hours, I think is very cool. And I'm jealous, disappointed that we haven't gotten to see more of her yet, but we'll see what happens, I guess.
Awesome.
So Janeway is technically number one. But.
Okay, fair enough. Now, switching away from the small screen, What was the first Star Trek movie that you saw?
The first one that I saw was, I feel like the first movies, they all kind of blurred together because it would have been around that like 99, 2000 era when I was first deep, just diving into Star Trek head on.
Right.
And going to the library and Blockbuster and renting a bunch of things, and I didn't have any idea that they were out of order, and I hadn't gotten a chance to watch the original series yet.
Blockbuster, because... I'm sure some kids are now confused. Like, what's that?
What's a Blockbuster?
Exactly.
More or less. So, yeah, I mean, it was before the era of downloading. It was before streaming.
Yeah.
DVDs were even at the library. So I probably, I feel like either First Contact or maybe Thor, The Voyage Home were among the earliest movies that I saw and definitely enjoyed, because I think when I tried to watch one, the motion picture,
right,
it was maybe a bit over my head, and young Andrew did not completely understand what was going on. So he gravitated to the guns and whistles of Star Trek First Contact.
Fair enough, and that makes sense. Yep.
Now I've come to find things I appreciate in all of them. Even,
of course,
I mean, even Five has a few redeeming qualities that I've been able to pick out over the years. But Voyage Home and First Contact were definitely, like, these were good movies that I could watch again and again that I knew from a young age. I think Nemesis would have been the first one I got to see in theaters, and I remember thinking, so I kind of was.
So the last Next Gen movie.
Yeah.
First one you saw in theaters.
So I remember hoping for there to be more. So that was my, you know, I had seen on the internet or wherever that, you know, people had gotten so excited for Star Trek movies before. So when my first Star Trek movie in theaters came out, I was so excited for, like, the whole of the world. Star Trek is so cool and come join it. And, you know, Nemesis didn't necessarily perform as well as a lot of other movies for any number of reasons, but
that movie's got one thing or two things going for it. In an alternate universe, it has Professor Xavier and Bane in the same movie.
I know.
So it's
in that respect,
it works.
Yeah, when I saw it in theaters, I thought it was good. I liked it. I mean, I still think it's good, and it's got.
I mean, you can still find enjoyable. Yeah, you can still find enjoyable aspects of it.
Plus, I had completely drank the Star Trek Kool-Aid by then, so they could have put anything out, and I was gonna love it. But I do remember a tinge of disappointment that it wasn't something I could get all of my friends to, like, drag and go see.
Right.
So I was.
Is that because they weren't into Star Trek, or they just didn't care for that movie?
Yeah, it was. Combination of both. They weren't into Star Trek. They, you know, they would maybe see a commercial for it or something and be like, just not super interested. Yeah. But then, you know, the J.J. Abrams movie comes out. Add to that, you know, you enter the kind of the dark age, the modern dark age of Star Trek after Enterprise, where there's no real new content until J.J. Abrams movie. And I remember thinking in that era, like, oh my gosh, I've come to love this so much and become such a Star Trek fan, and I'm, you know, all over Memory Alpha and whatnot, and then I was entering my own version of Voyager's Night. Whoa, this story is coming full circle.
Yeah, see that? Yeah.
But then on the other end, the stars came through and Janeway carried me through it. And I remember, I think even like my second Instagram picture or something is like a picture of Star Trek up on the marquee at the movie theater. It's like, you know, not every day of life is going to be as good as a day when a Star Trek movie is in a movie theater. And now I get to live through, you know, something like six Star Trek series simultaneously.
Yeah,
hopefully.
It's not on the movie screen, but it's on the
crazy
streaming TV screen. So it works.
So I am on board. I am just so grateful to be having Star Trek to watch. I know some people have some negative things to say about Discovery, maybe some Picard. And I've definitely seen that on Twitter, but I really like Discovery. I think, I believe strongly really that, you know, you don't have Star Trek if the company can't make a Star Trek that they can sell, that the TV stations are going to want, that the viewers are going to want. So there's that area where, yes, you have to appease the fans, and I'm the one that loves those recurring themes. I want the Klingons to look exactly the same, and I want the Enterprise to be a, you know, perfect replica like they did on Enterprise, but I recognize that that's not always the case, so I'm going to find the things I can enjoy in Star Trek whenever I can. And
I think you said it best in the sense of it. Yes, they have to appease fans, like a long-time fans. But you also have to create a show that it can bring in new fans. Because if a property doesn't have, you know, new fans driving it, eventually, you know, it's gonna fizzle out.
Sure. And on top of that, it's not always just, you know, just the idea of appeasing fans or bringing in new people, but you've got writers who have stories that they want to tell. And actually, something I like about Discovery, for example, is that the structure of the stories, the ideas of the stories, do feel authentically different than kind of the 90s golden era of Star Trek, where I remember watching episodes of Enterprise and in the middle of Enterprise thinking, this is kind of the same story that happened on Next Generation, or this is kind of the same story that happened over on Voyager. Right. So that infusion of new blood, even if it, you know, results in some canon sway, I think it's better for the franchise overall.
And in terms of canon, let's say nothing is as out of order as the X-Men franchise. So I mean, when people have canon problems, I'm just like, yeah, just look over here and see if you can figure this out. And then we'll come back and talk about the issues with Star Trek.
Gosh, I can't even imagine what's happening on the X-Men wiki and how they work.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Those things.
I don't know how those people, you know, do it, but God bless them if they can figure it out. If they can, let me know, because I'm still trying to piece it together. But so what's your, you said, you know, you're enjoying Discovery and Picard. How are you feeling about the announcement of Strange New Worlds with Pike and Spock and Number One? And
What of an answer could I produce other than super excited to see that? I mean, kind of, it's not exactly the same as with Georgiou, but it's in the same sense of, you know, the minute that Anson Mount was on the screen, something about his presence was just so captivating and cool, and you just wanted to watch to see what happens. And I knew I was going to love, oh my gosh, who's playing Number One? Rebecca Romijn,
yeah.
Yes.
Speaking Rebecca of Romijn, X-Men.
Speaking of X-Men, right.
Jesus, I knew there's a lot of parallels here already.
I knew when she was announced that I was going to love her portrayal of Number One. It just, I knew just from the actress that it was going to be great. And, you know, even Spock, all of it, just Discovery Season 2, I thought they did a really good job. And so I am very excited to see what their adventures look like. And I think it's going to be kind of that same... kind of the same with Discovery, that this is new writers, this is new ideas, it's literally Strange New Worlds, that they're going to try to create new stories without violating canon, knock on wood, hopefully. But because they are off in some strange distant beta quadrant or something where they're not interacting, you know, with the Romulans and the Klingons and the Cardassians over and over again. So that's one of my hopes for Strange New Worlds. If they, you know, I think otherwise you run the risk of being, you know, falling into the traps that Enterprise kind of fell into every now and then of, let's bring back the Borg. Oh, let's bring back the Fringi. Oh, let's tell these stories. You know, and those stories had their ups and downs, but, you know, it felt more like a restriction than an opportunity to tell a new good story occasionally.
Yeah. No, yeah. There you go. Yeah, you can tell I'm excited because this podcast was born out of that announcement. So clearly, I'm looking forward to it for sure. But I can't wait until we can start hopefully hearing some, you know,
announcements, details, yeah, and casting, anything.
Yeah. Right, yeah, it'll be a good time when we can start discussing that, because it'll mean the world is moving in a somewhat normal fashion, whatever that ends up being.
Yeah, well, that too, especially with the pandemic. But I think you know, I think with Enterprise and Discovery and Picard, there was, well, maybe less with Picard, but definitely Enterprise and Discovery, there was kind of this trickle of information over a period of time and just kind of over all of these upcoming series is, because I know there's also, like I mentioned, Lower Decks, there's, the Section 31 show, the other animated show, there's really very, very little, there's, you know, a few castings here and there, but there's very little that we know about any of them. So right. I hope CBS is just preparing this awesome reveal process of games or something just to get attention of all the cool ideas they've got.
Yeah, because I think, you know, like Lower Decks and the other animated project probably have, you know, Lower Decks, I think there was a voice announcement, wasn't there, mm-hmm. at some point?
Yeah, they've got some information out, but it's still pretty sparse considering I think it's supposed to be 2020, if not.
Right.
So it's supposed to be like coming up pretty soon.
So they must have done their animation and you know, they must have something in the can in that respect. And in terms of the Nickelodeon animation thing, I haven't heard anything on that. But again, that was announced about a year ago. So I'm assuming they've made headway in terms of, because animation, aside from the voicing, which you have to do in the studio, I guess you could do some of it from home if the actor had a voice, you know, a home studio or whatever. But, you know, that's going to have at least a voice cast as well. We just haven't heard about it. And I think, you know, don't they usually have that Vegas Trek convention?
Yeah, I think that is usually one of the big announcements. Isn't that usually in
the summer,
too?
The late summer?
Usually, I think so.
August-ish or something around that time. So what I'm hoping will happen is that'll happen,
online,
a streaming thing where and you get all the creators from the different shows to have a YouTube panel, and they make some announcements, because that's doable. I know. I know Comic-Con is doing San Diego is doing a convention online. So, you know, conceivably, the same thing would happen for Star Trek, and that's when we would hear some detailed announcements. Let's hope that's the case, and see where all that leads. But there's definitely lots to look forward to.
Right. I mean, this is, I think, just a good era to be a Star Trek fan because of that. You know, there are six series of announcements in some level of reveal that I can look forward to versus, like I mentioned, that kind of dark age of Star Trek when there was like, okay, Enterprise is over. Riker and Troy have walked off the set and now that's it. That's it for the unforeseeable, you know, the foreseeable future. You don't know what's going to be the next thing.
So was, because that ended in what year was that?
05, I think.
Right. And then it was 4 years until really.
Yeah. Well, it felt longer.
Well, three something, because they would have been filming in 08. So, so 3.5 years with nothing, virtually nothing. Yeah. So this is definitely an abundance by comparison. Now the problem is, well, we haven't heard anything yet, you know. So we've got some information, but now it's like, okay, we want more, you know. And that happens usually with me, especially with like when every year, because I've never been to a San Diego Comic-Con, whenever the Marvel or DC movies make announcements. So I've just had a day of here, a bunch of announcements. And then it's like, you know, half an hour after processing it all right, I want to hear more about this. I want to hear more about that. And you get the cycle begins. So it's the same thing here. But there is a lot to look forward to. And I'm sure it's just a matter of time before we start having some more information about each of these trickle in. And of course, we'll share our thoughts on all that information here as we get it and as we record episodes. So you'll be definitely getting information on that front. So in terms of, you know, we've kind of broadly covered your experience with television, with the movies. So in terms of media outside of film and television, like books and comics, where are you at with that in that realm, in that space?
So I've let's see, I've consumed a good number, a moderate number of the novels through the years, kind of the novels that I could convince myself were within the general canon of the show. Right. So things like The Lives of Dax, I knew that wasn't going to be actively contradicted, so I kind of gravitated to stories like those. I really liked the there was a Starfleet Corps of Engineers series, which I read really religiously for a long time, but then I had a house fire and then I had to go and track down the books again, and it just kind of was a rough patch of my life. So I have some of those books, but I haven't always caught up on them. I have I tend to gravitate to the reference works that are kind of more detail heavy about things. Like, I know there's an old RPG book about the Vulcans and the Way of Kolinar, and there's an old RPG guide to Andorians that revealed a bunch of information before we knew absolutely anything about the Andorians. So I have kind of tried to collect those over time and go through those. And I mean, I remember back when, so Memory Beta is the kind of Star Trek wiki for books and things that are considered official, but not necessarily canon. And I remember back when there was almost no users on there, that I was kind of trying to start to build up the momentum there by, like, as I was going through the books, writing articles and creating things, and it has since taken off and gone and has a life of its own. But yeah, I tend to gravitate to the kind of reference-y books, and I'm trying to get through as many novels as I can. I recognize that, you know, there's just so many Star Trek novels through the years, especially, you know, even going back to the 70s, but I'm probably not going to be able to track down every single one of them.
Have you read Kirk's biography, or?
I have owned it for a while now, and I just started it, I think, last week. And I'm like, I got to about 2/3 or 3/4 through in one night. And I have to finish that last fourth.
You must be enjoying it then. If you got through
Yeah. Well, it's perfect, because I mean, that's the kind of writing that, you know, I think a lot of the modern novel writers kind of do what I like, you know, write the way that I like, that is connecting the dots within the universe to make the universe seem even more inclusive than it already does, even more connected. And that, you know, a writer will find some, you know, there's this unexplained weird thing that happens in season 3 of Next Generation that they never talk about again. And then they'll find a way to solve that almost inconsistency and make it relevant to some other story. So I love when writers do that. My favorite probably being The Rise of Khan what the first one was called? Greg Cox wrote a 3-part Khan Noonien Singh story. And the first part kind of deep dives, I keep using the phrase deep dive, but, you know, talks about, you know, these eugenic wars in the 90s, how come, you know, they didn't actually come to pass? And here's this book that goes into detail of, well, it did happen, but it was behind the scenes, and here is how everything all connects. And that is probably one of my favorites. And then I know you're a big comic book fan. I've done the occasional comic books. I've tried to read the countdowns whenever possible. There was a Starfleet Academy series, probably around the era of 2000-ish, that I really liked. Again, that was, you know, back then I thought that's the series idea that Star Trek hasn't really run with yet.
They teased something about a Starfleet Academy series that was in development now.
Right.
I don't know what happened to it, but I know the idea is out there. So
yeah. Maybe that's what the other animated series will be, another a Starfleet kid. Yeah. But I really like that idea of, you know, here's this thing that we all talk about a lot, but have never really gotten deep into the details. Yeah. So that's what kind of drew me to that comic. And then, of course, Voyager is the first ones I tended to go to. And next on my pandemic shopping list, I'm spending all my money on Amazon and eBay, is... I think there was like a Next Generation Deep Space Nine short comic series where it was like Trill related stories, that the president of Trill, and there's bombings and something about the symbionts, obviously.
I'll have to look that up for sure.
And And I know it's, I can imagine Virad is on the cover of one of them, but they're kind of hard to come by. Whenever I'm in a comic shop, I try to track them out. But the Trill, I think, are one of my favorite Star, they probably are my favorite Star Trek species, right, because we see them so frequently, but we don't go too much into their background. And I would love to hear more about their background. You know, rarely have we had a Star Trek main character where we didn't really talk about the species, their homeworld, too deeply. Maybe maybe Dr. Phlox would be an example, but you know, between Jadzia and Ezri, we like, they visited Trill once, but just about every other reference is to the symbionts, to the symbionts, to the symbionts, but they never talk about like Trill food or Trill culture or anything else. And I just imagine there being this three-dimensional existence that we have yet to see. So that is one of the things that I'm next on my.
It's funny. I gotta check that out because I've never seen it. So I have to look on Comixology. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's an easier get digitally. but I, if I could recommend something in terms of comics, I don't know if you're a fan of this other franchise, but if there's an original series crossover with Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes. I have not seen.
You've never seen the original movies?
No, I've seen the movie.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Star Trek.
You might be the only person that's never seen those movies. But no. The comic is, because on paper you're like, how does that work? And then you read it, and I'm like, I kind of want to see this movie. Like, this is a movie that I want to see. It'll never happen, but hey, I mean, it's a fun story. It's a fun read. So if you want something to read in this era of being, you know, stuck at home, I would recommend that. I think you'll get a kick out of it.
I think the comics have had a lot of good crossover opportunities, and I'm saying good in the concept of the concept, and not necessarily having read them all, because I have not. Right. But yeah, I know that the
execution
is
depending on the execution. But like, here's an example. They had a 2009, you know, the JJ Trek.
Yeah.
Team up with Green Lantern.
I've seen it. I have not read it.
I've read. There's two volumes. I've read them both. They're really good, actually. They're quite good. But it's funny because whenever I look at the art, there was a rumor a while back that it didn't end up coming to pass, but that Chris Pine was going to play Hal Jordan.
Oh. And
it was around the time when this comic was coming out. So as I was reading it and I'm looking, and of course, you know, Kirk looks like Chris Pine. And Hal Jordan, you can kind of see Chris Pine in there. So it's like, man, these two guys look a lot like they have similar personalities. They have similar, and it's like, if that movie ever came to pass where Chris Pine, and of course he's in Wonder Woman, so that's not going to happen. But if Chris Pine were ever, you know, Green Lantern, I would have this crossover in my head the whole time I was watching the movie. And like, how would that work?
Yeah, the comics are great about I think they're really good at getting the licensed ideas that don't necessarily we can't ever get that film.
Yeah, you never get that, exactly. Two studios to cooperate like that, not a chance.
But it plays out well in a comic book, and especially because it's so visually rewarding and entertaining. And I know there's Doctor Who has had a crossover.
Oh yeah,
Transformers is the one.
That's the one I haven't read yet. And I'm like, Jesus, I gotta read that.
And then I do remember there was an X-Men one. It was a novel back in the 90s. Because whenever I would go to the library, I would go through the books, and I think, okay, well, this is never going to be canon, so I'm going to skip over this one. But it was before the X-Men movies, and obviously, Patrick Stewart was born to play Professor X. So I always thought that was really a cool crossover idea to have played out.
So was this is this like a novel or a graphic novel? Where it's
It was a novel.
Oh wow! So not even yeah. That's fine. I've never seen that. That's fascinating.
I will track it down.
But that's insane. And of course, you know, Patrick Stewart is Professor X. I mean. If he was born to play two roles, it's Picard and Xavier. So wouldn't it be funny if they rebooted Next Gen and they cast what's his name?
Oh yes,
McAvoy,
Professor X.
That would be the most hilarious bit of purposeful casting I've ever seen, but I'd be for it. I'd be like, all right.
I think it would be fun if Star Trek Picard ends up bringing back a young Picard. And
it's McAvoy, yeah.
Bring McAvoy on.
You know what? I'd pay them to do that. Let's start a Kickstarter just for that. But yeah, that's good. So you've got your well versed in all corners of Trek to a degree. So that's good. So if anybody's wondering,
I try.
When we started this episode, if anyone's wondering, what does this guy know about Star Trek? He's got his hands in all different areas. So we're good in terms of having a knowledgeable fan joining us on this journey. So
thank you.
We're happy to have you aboard, and we can't wait to get started in proper way. And but in the meantime, before the next episode, which will be about a month or so before they hear the next one, where can our listeners get a chance to interact with you and talk about all things Star Trek?
Okay, well, I am on Twitter at Andrew DeFratis, AndrewDeFratis, which is where I'm trying to grow my Star Trek connections. But I'm also on Memory Alpha. My username is AJ Hallowell, and that's where I do a lot of contributing. There's not a lot of room for social networking there, but I'll find a way to talk to you.
There we go. So if you want to interact with him in the meantime, those are the places to do that. If you want to talk to me, you can on Twitter at @Adam_LeesFan. And then on Facebook, we have the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network. If you want to join there, you can ask for permission to join and we will add you. And then we could talk Star Trek, we could talk DC, we could talk Marvel, whatever you want. It's open for discussion. So whichever social media platform you prefer, there's a way to get a hold of us, so have at it. We look forward to hearing from you and discussing Star Trek and all the other podcasts we have on this network with us. So hope to hear from some of our listeners.
Yeah.
But we hope you enjoyed this this chat with Andrew, and you'll be hearing much more of him in the episodes to come. Until then, we hope you have a wonderful evening or day or weekend or whenever you are, whenever you happen to be listening to it. We hope it's a wonderful time for you. And until next time, remember to stay safe and live long and prosper. So long, everybody.